The COVID-19 pandemic is causing major psychological distress. And this hour of the morning show, we hear stories of living with anxiety and depression in these difficult times. We'll find hope in the process. Thanks for being here. I'm Kate Archer Kent. A study this month in the journal Brain Behavior and Immunity says the neuropsychiatric burden of this pandemic is currently unknown, but likely to be significant. It warned of what called a crashing wave of mental health problems. Are your symptoms intensifying in these months? Have you sought help? Have you had interruptions in your medications or your counseling sessions? What happened? Share at any point, 800-642-1234. Terry McGuire is Digital and Community Outreach Specialist with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. She produces a weekly podcast there called Giving Voice to Depression, which she hosts with her sister, Bridget. Terry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to talk.
You've been listening and supporting people every day during this pandemic. What are you hearing from people when it comes to their mental health?
It is as varied as the people, which I think is sort of typical if you think of depression, anxiety, and other mental illnesses like we do other illnesses. There are going to be people who have mild symptoms, and there are actually some people who are finding the being at home and not having to have the social environments that cause them stress and anxiety, they're doing better. And then there are people who were doing fine and as it drags on are doing less fine and wanting their meds adjusted or other things to help them. And then there are people who are really struggling. I mean, if you're highly anxious about illness, this is a terrible time. One way you manage your depression is, say, go to the gym, and that's not an option. If it's being social and having other people, or even the routine of having to get up and go to work, those things are lost now. And so some people are adjusting and finding other self-care methods, and others are just staying in bed or doing the things that do not help them get out of it.
So the pandemic can be a very triggering time for people maybe in the past who have battled anxiety and depression, but it resurfaces in the moment. Have you seen any of that where people had their, mental health really in a good position, in a good state, and now this happens and they relapse?
Yes, I think that the structure of the day, right, when you have to get up, when you have to get the kids to school, when you have to get to your job, kind of regardless almost of how you're feeling, that can push you out of, it doesn't make you not depressed, it's not that simple, but it can make you do those things and not just, in quotes, be in it. But when you're home, it's easier to sink into it, especially if you're not working now. What would distract you enough to sort of shift your mind a bit? And that can be a really dangerous place. I live with depression. If I was not working, I think this would be a very difficult time for me because I am alone and there are very few opportunities to do something healthy for myself other than walk and write and the things that I do that are in my self-help toolkit.
We're talking with Terry McGuire, works with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. She provides online support to support groups that connect through social media. Taking your questions, parents, are you feeling more stressed lately? What are your biggest issues? Is it having the kids at home more? Is it what the fall will bring? And what do you do about your anxiety? Join in at 800-642-1234. Terry, can we talk a bit about your struggles with depression? How did you confront it? How did you realize it was there with you?
I'm glad to talk about it. And I think the key is I didn't realize what it was. And that's because of stigma, because we don't talk about it. If, I had a tightness in my chest and it started going down my arms or my jaw hurt, I would have some concept, some understanding, oh, this might be a heart attack. But when I just sunk deeper and deeper into despair and hopelessness and exhaustion and feeling like I didn't matter and there was no point to life. There was no part of me that thought, oh, Terry, this might be the illness called depression, and perhaps if you call your doctor, you know, you can get on some medication, get some treatment, start therapy, and be healthy again. That's because no one I told how I was feeling suggested it either. You know, when we cough and cough and cough these days, someone would say get tested for COVID before, you know, if it didn't go away, they'd say, could it be pneumonia? But when it's a mental health issue, because we don't know the signs, we don't know the symptoms, and we don't talk about it, some people are in it, including me, way longer than necessary. And I'm not an unresourced person. You know, I used to be a TV news reporter and anchor in Milwaukee, and, you know, I know how to do research, but I didn't even think to look up, is this an illness? Why do I feel like this? So I was in it a lot longer than I needed to be. I finally, when I scared myself, actually called my doctor and said, I don't know what's happening. And he was like, come on in. And I take a low-dose antidepressant every morning, and it puts a floor beneath my feet again. You know, there's not that pit.
What was the turning point for you? When did you reach out to your doctor?
I had never been what I call suicidal. I had very much wouldn't have cared had I not wakened any given morning during this period, which was almost 2 years. But one morning, I did think I was having a heart attack. And the first thought that went through my head, and this is depression. Depression tells you you are ruthless. This isn't me not caring about my life or my family or my children or the world. But I thought, I think I'm having a heart attack. And the first thought was throw your phone, because if your phone's beside you, they'll wonder why you didn't reach out for help. And this was, I threw my phone into the next room. And that was like, ding, you know, something just, I was like, whoa, you just crossed a line. You know, get out of bed, get that phone, call your doctor, because now you're sort of participating in it. And that scared me. And people get a lot closer to the edge than that, and far too many over it before, well, they don't have the opportunity to reach for help. But before we think of it as an illness and that we could feel better, fortunately for me, something rang just then. And, you know, I saw my doctor that same day. And within probably, I don't know, a week, I started feeling a difference from the antidepressant.
What are some of the tools in your toolbox right now in managing your depression?
Mine and others. I've probably interviewed more than 200 people with depression, so I'm going to add some of theirs into just to give, you know, obviously a therapist, medication, those are sort of the top two. But the more day-to-day things that we can do. Getting out in nature. I know people think that sounds a little woo-woo, but it's really true. Getting some sun. Exercise is huge, and you don't have to be a gym buff, and you don't have to be a real fitness person. It can be turning on your radio and dancing. It can be taking a walk, any kind of movie. I'm going to cough, and I don't want to do it into my microphone. Hold on.
Take your time. Not a problem.
Yeah. I journal, and it really helps to get the thoughts out of my head. Other people tell me that they will take a long drive. Sometimes they just need, especially during COVID, to just get out of this environment, to get out of their head and take in a ride with the windows down and music blaring. There are all kinds of things. And you can, you know, look some up online. Some people shop, of course, and do other things like that. But watching a funny movie, there have been days during this that, you know, at the end of the day, I think, I really need to laugh. And I've watched, you know, a comedy and felt considerably better afterwards.
We're talking with Terry McGuire with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. She documents the struggles and achievements of people living with depression through her podcast called Giving Voice to Depression. Are you trying to help a friend or loved one get into therapy? Have they had telehealth sessions? Do they have health coverage, or are their copays and deductibles manageable? Let's talk through this. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about coping with anxiety and depression. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Researchers at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Harvard, they surveyed Americans about their stress levels in late May. More than half of respondents reported being more stressed in May than they were in January. And the study asked what was causing the most added stress and anxiety. The biggest concern was the health and safety of a family member or friend. Are you helping a loved one through a mental health crisis? Or have you been through this before? What can you tell us about the effects of depression? There's time to talk. 800-642-1234. Terry McGuire is with Mental Health America of Wisconsin, and she works with people coping with depression and anxiety. Terry, let's talk about your podcast, Giving Voice to Depression. And we have a link, by the way, to it. It's at WPR.org/mornings. How did it get started?
What I just told you, my own story, when I came out of that depression, I spent a lot of time asking myself what would have helped me, because I just couldn't make peace with having lost that much time and that much of myself for no good reason. And I realized there isn't always a silver lining to having a deep depression, but I was desperate to find one. And I decided that the thing that would have helped me is peer support, hearing from someone else who had been there, who could tell me what you're feeling is real and you can get out of it, that there's an other side. I could not have done that in a group. I didn't have the energy. One of my main symptoms is just a deep exhaustion. I call it tired on a cellular level. And I wanted to have that information, but not have to go anywhere to get it. I didn't want a friend to stop by with a meal and talk with me. It would have all taken more than I had. So I thought, oh, wait, I can do this in a podcast. I can reach people who aren't reaching out. I can make it that easy for them to hear stories of other people who have been where they've been. And even interviewing suicide attempt survivors, I've heard back from so many people saying, I was right there. You know, I was really in crisis. I, you know, had a plan, all those things. And I heard someone on your podcast say they were so glad they were alive, that they had survived their attempt. Mm. And I realized that you can still have a healthy, full, even occasionally joyful life with, you know, after you've been that low. And I hear it daily. I hear it absolutely every day. Just this morning, right before we went on the air, which is one reason I was a little scattered, is that I got a message on our Facebook page from someone saying that he was having really serious suicidal thoughts. And by the end of our conversation, not that this is any miracle, his wife showed up, so he wasn't alone, which was the main thing. And they were going to get help. But he said, I understand there's a beyond. He used the phrase beyond the blues, because I said, hey, you know, as somebody who's been there, I can tell you, you can get out of it. So, you know, don't be alone during this crisis. It doesn't last forever. And make sure you're not alone. And he had reached out to his therapist and doctor already. So it's just hearing from somebody, hearing that somebody else has been there, because it's really common. It's just that we don't talk about it.
How does it make you feel when you reach out to a friend who isn't suffering from depression? What are those conversations like?
I would love to say I do, but I don't. Do you mean for help?
For help or for an ear, for just someone to listen?
Yeah, I don't think that that's for me, and from what I've heard from the people I speak with, I'm not sure that's always your best option. I think it's very often a better idea to call, say, the Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255, or the text line, 741-7401, so that you're talking to someone who has been trained to listen, who has heard it before, so they're not going to judge or get scared or panic. You know, the last thing you want to do is say, you know, I'm really sad. You know, I don't even know if I want to live. That's different than saying I'm actively suicidal. And if someone calls an ambulance to your house or the police, that really can escalate things. So it can help to talk again to somebody who's been through it or has been trained to talk with people who are in crisis. Or crisis doesn't have to mean you're actively suicidal. Crisis is whenever you're in a situation that you're finding beyond your ability at the moment to handle. And the lifelines, the crisis lines, the local ones included, like COPE in Ozaukee County, where I used to work, you know, they're there for you when you need them. You define crisis. It's not that they're ever going to say, oh, I'm sorry, it's not bad enough for you to be using this line. So I don't call my friends.
We're talking with Terry McGuire. She's the Digital and Community Outreach Specialist with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. We're talking about depression and anxiety and the strain of the pandemic. With your insights, do you have anxiety or have you been diagnosed with a disorder? What symptoms do you have? What are some common triggers? Join in at 800-642-1234. Terry, you co-host the Giving Voice to Depression podcast with your sister, Bridget. How has your relationship evolved there as this podcast, as you work together, but also on the topic of depression?
I think it's significant that neither one of us had, our families didn't know we had depression, our own children, our spouses. We really also kind of bought into the nobody needs to know, this is private thing. We had talked to each other over the years. We've always been each other's supports, and she lives in Washington State. I'm here in Wisconsin. But through this, there's no way they don't know now. Everybody knows, and we're glad about that. And we both have felt a lifting almost. You're not even aware you're carrying that having a secret has a physical weight. And the being able to say, you know what, I'm not my best today. It doesn't have to be that you're, you know, really going down. But also when your family and your friends know the symptoms and they can see, you know, you're not yourself. You know, you're just, it's a little harder now that we're all in our own spaces. But, you know, when someone can say, you used to laugh more, or, you know, you haven't shown up yet, even when you're physically present, what's going on? Those kind of conversations can't happen if people don't know you struggle.
You've had hundreds of interviews now with people struggling with depression, struggling with anxiety. Is it difficult for people to talk with you about this, or do you find that they open up?
I thought it would be. You know, when I had the idea, it's not an exaggeration to say everyone told me no one would want to talk about their depression, and if they did, no one would want to listen. That has not been the case at all. I think that creating safe space, listening with understanding and with the desire to learn and really hear someone's story, learn from their experience, it's really empowering. And we have never, you know, it's been every week for 3.5 years. We have never had to struggle to find someone to talk. And many have spoken publicly with us for the first time. Their families may not have known before. We've had people, a gentleman who was in the hospital after an attempt, and he was listening to the podcast, and he said, one of the ways I'll know I'm better is when I can tell my story. And then one day he reached out and said, I'm ready. And then his son heard his episode and said, we didn't know our dad had depression until he attempted suicide. I have depression, and I want to talk about how learning about my dad's enabled me to speak about mine, and now we're a support for each other. So it's just absolutely beautiful things are happening, and I would never, ever have guessed it, but I am so deeply honored to be a part of it and to be, you know, the messenger for these stories. But nobody's having, I mean, I'm sure there are people who don't want to talk to me about it, and I wouldn't know, but the people who have reached out and the people who have made comments on our Facebook page, that's a community that more than, I think, like 8,300 people as of this morning are actively supporting each other.
And what do they teach you about depression that you didn't know?
Oh, that's a good question. That it varies, that like any other illness, you know, some people are going to have COVID and have hardly any symptoms, and we know the other end of that spectrum. I thought that depression was the way I have it, that I'm very, very sad and lethargic and hopeless. Some people get really agitated and angry. I didn't know that was a symptom of depression. You know, it shows up differently for people. So I didn't know that. I didn't realize how much people consciously keep it a secret. I just never occurred to me to tell anybody because I don't think they could do anything, and I didn't want them showing up trying because I didn't think they could do anything. You know, another fear was if you tell people, they won't do anything, and then it would confirm what you're thinking, which is that I have no value. So I think it was mostly just the breadth of the experience and the absolute how healthy it is when you find someone you can talk to openly, and then when you do that, you find you open the door. I have never spoken publicly about my depression without having my phone ring or people show up, you know, when it's in a school or something afterwards to say, you know, I need to, you know, my mother, my brother, myself, anybody. And they want to talk about it because they can. And all of a sudden they realize, oh my gosh, we can talk about this. And then I can say, I know a really good therapist, or have you tried this online app, or, you know, be very careful these days monitoring what you put in your body. You know, that's another thing when you're talking about coping skills. Yeah.
Let's pause there with Terry McGuire with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. She provides online support through a support group that connects through social media. Have you lost your job during COVID? Or are you worried your job could be the next to be cut? How has that affected your mental health? Have you been unable to get support from the government because of your unemployment claim is hung up? How do you manage the stress brought on by the pandemic? 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update here on the Ideas Network. We're focusing on the effects of anxiety and depression this hour, getting tips on how to provide support to a loved one. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new survey by the Healthy Minds Network found 3 in 5 college students say the pandemic has made it harder to access mental health care, even as financial stresses and the prevalence of depression increased among them. And the respondents compared their mental health to before the pandemic. Is your college student having difficulty managing life? Are you concerned about signs of depression? How are your conversations with them? And are you reaching them? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We have Terry McGuire, digital and community outreach specialist with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. She supports people coping with anxiety and depression. Let's take a call now. Jeff is joining us from Appleton. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. I'm not a person who's ever been diagnosed or really fought with depression, but I have found myself in just watching the news and the coverage that's being put out there today by all of our mainstream media. There is good news out there, but nobody wants to report any of it. So my question would be for the guest, what do you tell people who are dealing with depression and anxiety? How do they deal with the negativity that's out there and still get news?
Jeff, thank you for that. Terry, how do you broach that 24/7 news cycle that is pumping out really difficult news?
It's a really good question. And Jeff, I used to be a TV news reporter, so I understand why they do it. And the use of words like crisis and everything, whether or not it's related to COVID. And it is stressful. And one of the things we need to do, when I was saying we need to be very mindful of what we put into our bodies, and that includes content, and whether it's watching television, you know, listening to the radio, watching the things on social media, we need to limit it. We really need to take care of ourselves. And if it causes you stress, if it upsets you, if it makes you sad, be aware of that and take responsibility for how much you allow in. We need to know certain things, what we can do to keep ourselves safe, what we can do to keep family members safe. Beyond that, you know, is it really breaking news every single, you know, update on the number of deaths, which states outside of your own where you're going to be have changed their rules for whether or not you need to wear a mask? But it isn't all necessary to ingest. And I think that people, whether or not they have diagnosable mental health challenges, need to be very, very mindful of what upsets you and limit it. I personally get, you know, I go to a source I trust and I listen to it or I read it, and then I'm done for the day. I do not watch it nonstop because I know it makes me angry, sad. You know, you can't help but feel a little hopeless. Those aren't healthy feelings for me or anybody else.
What influence does social media have on how people approach the issues around depression?
Well, it's good and bad. You know, I've read plenty of things about social media that because everybody's presentation of their life is curated, you know, nobody's putting up a picture of them when they can't get out of bed. They look great and they've got their filters, and, you know, everybody else's life looks so much better than yours that it can't help but make you feel a little inferior. But it can also be really good. Like, and I'm not promoting this, I'm saying as there are other things too, but the Giving Voice to Depression Facebook page, people support each other. Someone says, I am really low, I'm having a hard time. And other people say, oh, you know, hold on, I've been there. This works for me. Have you listened to this Calm app? You know, here's a link to a mindful self-compassion meditation that's helpful to me. So I think, like pretty much anything, it can have a, you know, can be a double-edged sword, and you have to be careful of that also, how you use it and what you take in and how much you let it affect you. I can't watch, you know, you can't watch other people having big parties if you are really upset by that because you think everyone should be distanced and wearing a mask. So we have to control what we can control in these very out of control times.
Have you tried meditation apps or some type of that practice?
Yes. And since COVID, I actually took a mindful self-compassion course online because I was finding myself, I don't know how you wouldn't find yourself stressed, whether or not you have a diagnosed problem. These are incredibly stressful and anxious times, and it's completely normal to feel that way. It's a matter of whether or not it's impeding your ability to function, and that's when you need to get a medical professional, a therapist involved. But yes, I have, and I find it incredibly helpful. I need to just, you know, sometimes I'll just listen to the newscast, and I have to close my eyes and just do a bit of deep breathing and sort of ground and center myself and say, you're doing what you can. One of the therapists I interviewed likened this nonstop news as when you get in your car and that chime is going off telling you to put on your seatbelt. Once you put it on, the chime's supposed to stop. You know, you've done all you can do. But if it just kept going, it would cause you great distress. And that's, again, back to the news cycle, what that can do to us. So I think there are lots of things out there, and some people will do yoga. You know, some people scoff when you say it. It's like, do not tell me to do yoga again. So we all have to find what works for us. But mindful self-compassion has been very helpful for me, as has, you know, really mindful breathing.
Terry McGuire is with us with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. She produces a weekly podcast called Giving Voice to Depression. We're looking at the effects of anxiety and depression this hour. With your insights, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Roger now, joining us from Spring Green. Hi, Roger.
Hi. I am a person who lives with PTSD, depression, and anxiety, and have done a good amount of therapy and learned a number of skills. And I've developed a Zoom presentation and conversation that focuses on, this is a pandemic, this is something we're not used to, and so we're kind of always searching to try to understand it, and then look at identifying situations that are causing us stress, look at what emotions we're having from that, and then understanding that emotion, then looking at what can we control? What do we have control over that we can do to help make ourselves safer or less stressed? And so really using mental health skills at a time when our entire world is in a mental health crisis.
Roger, thank you for bringing that forward. Terry, where can we find the things that we can control, as Roger said?
I think that is such a good point, and thanks for making it, Roger. When life is out of control, right, we have to really focus on and find, sometimes even create, the things we can control. Some of those are a routine. Our routines are gone. So if we can be very careful and mindful about going to bed at the same time, getting up at the same time, it doesn't matter that you don't have to throw on your suit or whatever and get in a car and drive to work. It is very helpful to have that because it provides a structure. And what, again, back to the media, right? What we ingest, whether that's food, you know, it's very important to be eating healthy foods now, to be hydrating. Rest is huge, getting enough sleep. Whether you have a mental health condition or not, a lack of sleep is very unhealthy for everybody. And it makes it a lot harder to have clear thoughts and judgment to be able to take in and assess everything that's going on in the world right now and to just get through our days in a healthy and calm way.
Roger, thanks for the call. Terry, how do you find that people coping with depression self-medicate at home?
I don't know like what the company line is. I think that it's very natural for many people when they feel bad to do something that they believe will make them feel better. And for a lot of people that's drinking and drugs, it doesn't actually work in the long run. You know, short, you might be feeling great for a minute, but alcohol consumption is so up, and we know Wisconsin has issues with that to start. And it's a depressant. You know, there's nothing about putting a depressant in your body and or waking up feeling terrible the next morning that's going to help you get through anything, including a mental health challenge or a pandemic. So while it is very tempting, again, especially if you don't have to get up and go to work right now, it's really self-defeating.
Do you find that access to the medical care, access to the counseling, to the you know, the physician who will be able to prescribe, are there accessibility issues when it comes to trying to treat depression?
There absolutely are accessibility issues and affordability issues, and that varies by area and by race as well, which is a huge problem and something that needs to be addressed. And maybe, you know, one of the potential silver linings of this pandemic is going to be a change in some of those things. The fact that you can now do telehealth and have your therapy by phone or video. We've been trying to do that for years, and it has been, you know, insurance companies wouldn't reimburse it. Now I suspect it's not going to go back to 100% in office, because many people that the act of getting out of bed, getting out of your house, getting transportation, whether or not you have your own, and getting to somebody's office to talk is just too many hurdles to clear. Being able to turn on your computer or pick up your phone and do it, much easier. So I think that accessibility has been and is a problem. I think affordability is. But I also think that if somebody has been putting off speaking with a therapist and they think that perhaps it would help, they should look into it again and get a hold of their insurance company, make a call, or if they can't, have someone else make that call with you. And to try to do it. I will be talking to my therapist today. I've got a 5:30 appointment, and I have one every 2 weeks just to talk. I don't have any major crisis going on in my life, but it never hurts to have somebody talk through things with you.
Continuing care. Yeah, we have Terry McGuire with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. She's our guide as we discuss the effects of anxiety and depression in the COVID era. Has your loved one found help and treatment? Are they doing better today? When did they decide to reach out for help? And what was it like for them to access mental health treatment? Is it affordable? Was there a waiting list to meet with a counselor? Is the virtual setup working okay? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Terry McGuire here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The journal Targeted Oncology has a new article out on physician depression in the era of COVID. It says that frontline healthcare workers face an unprecedented emotional burden due to the pandemic. And even when there's not a global health crisis, it says women physicians, resident physicians, and med students face higher rates of depression than the general population. Are you a healthcare worker experiencing trauma due to treating COVID-19? Where do you turn for help? Are you getting enough time between shifts to recover? Is it possible not to think about your patients? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We have Terry McGuire here with us from Mental Health America of Wisconsin. Let's take another call now. Joe is joining us from Star Lake. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, well, I have really a lot to say about the subject, but in a different way. My mother was a history teacher and one of my great heroes in life. But when I was 1 year old, she was married, was not a history teacher at that time, but loved history. And my father died of polio quite suddenly. And she was pregnant, and 4 months later, when my brother was born, he only lived for a few days. So my mother was just devastated by this twin tragedy. And she really withdrew back into almost into her life and read constantly and eventually came out of that. But, you know, what I got to understanding over a long life myself, I'm a writer and a public radio producer, is the importance of history and in sort of balancing or taking us out of often overwhelming emotional distress, because it just gives you this broader perspective. So back in the year 2000, I was doing a public radio project where I was recording people telling family stories, very specifically. These are stories, not their own story necessarily, but stories that have been passed down in their families. And it was a wonderful experience. I just had such a good time and learned so much and traveled all over the country recording people. And then so to finish this, on St. Patrick's Day, knowing we had just been quarantined, I went back into this very large archive, and these are short stories, 2, 3, 4, 6 minutes maybe long, very pointed stories about different things that people had been through. And I began to send them out to friends, and then that slowly kind of expanded as people kept telling other people. So there's a little network of people I send one story out a day and an email to. And, you know, they're funny, they're sad, they're all kinds of things, but they're all about sort of this core, I really think, immune system, psychological immune system that people have that often can come down to them through their family or through the people they know of sort of how we've weathered difficult times. So it's been fascinating to see the emails I get back from people and how devoted they are to these things.
Oh, Joe, thank you for bringing this. Terry McGuire, the power of storytelling and what stories come down through the generations.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely, there is great power in sharing our stories. And Joe used the phrase psychological immune system, which I would probably use the word resilience in the same way. And there are, you know, we can get through a lot. You know, humans are very, very resilient, but it also doesn't mean we have to do it alone. And so while our country, while the world, you know, puts great value on people soldiering up and getting by, you know, pulling up their bootstraps and all, that's great sometimes. It's also a sign of strength to say, I need some help right now, and to throw up the white flag when you need to.
We heard from Ryan in DeSoto, couldn't stay with us, wanted to know how to avoid taking antidepressants for major depression. Ryan says the medication makes Ryan feel like a zombie.
I hear that. First of all, I want to say it's great that the four people who've called in are male, because stigma is a real thing, and it is often even more powerful when men are supposed to be, you know, so tough and impermeable. But I think that there are a lot of different medications, and I think if one makes Ryan feel like a zombie, he should talk to his doctor or psychiatrist about trying a different one, because if he needs medication, and, you know, for many of us, that is a key part of our self-care, that there are just so many different ones out there. I've had to try several myself, Ryan, and I understand it is like shooting darts in the dark sometimes. It can be very disheartening. But if you find the right one, if meds work for you, then that is a really, really good thing.
How do you see the companionship here between taking antidepressants but also having counseling sessions, talk therapy?
I think it's widely believed that those two things together are the most helpful combination. I think that you can talk all you want about how you feel, but if there's something that isn't right inside your body, if there's something misfiring or chemically imbalanced, that you might need some medication to help make that, I can't say fix that, but to improve that. I think that taking a pill and being in isolation and not also sharing the struggles you're having, the self-doubt you're having, the negative talk that depression just puts on a loop in your head, that you're also not accessing the full amount of help that's out there. And it isn't, you know, when you have mentioned going into the breaks, you know, how do we help our loved ones? Saying, hey, something's wrong with you, you need to get help, can be really harsh. It can be harsh to say, and it can be really hard to hear. a kinder, gentler approach is to say, you deserve to be happy. You deserve to have some peace. A therapist might be able to help you with that. And if somebody's really in a dark place, they might not be able to make that call themselves and set that appointment up. Socially distancing, of course, you know, you can help them. You can sit in the room and make that call with them.
We're talking with Terry McGuire with Mental Health America of Wisconsin, providing online support to a support group that connects through social media. Still time for your insights on depression and anxiety, 800-642-1234. Terry, I wonder where you find hope these days, because I would imagine it's difficult for you to find that glimmer of hope and say, no, I can't feel that way, or being very hard on yourself.
Sure. Will you rephrase the question?
Well, I'm wondering, is it difficult for you to look at hope and find instances of hope around you in these difficult times and yet be reluctant to see that hope, reluctant to say, you know what, I should be happy about that?
Shoulds are always hard, right? We shouldn't should ourselves because, you know, we feel what we feel. I think that, I hate to speak in bumper stickers, but there's an expression that, you know, not every day is good, but there's good in every day. And I think that in times like this, we have to be more, we have to challenge ourselves more to look for the good. That was, again, one of the episodes that we just did two. We did a whole season on COVID on the podcast, and a therapist, we asked them what they're telling their clients so that somebody could basically get, you know, that advice without having to pay for a session. And she had said that we have to look for the good that's happening, even in this, right? There are, you know, we don't have to look for the bad, but, you know, the lovely things that people are doing for each other to support each other, the different and creative ways that people are reaching out. I have a 96-year-old mother, and she's unfortunately the first floor of a facility. And I went and put red lipstick on and kissed her window like 1,000 times with a girlfriend, not 1,000 times, but dozens, with a girlfriend who did the same thing. And she, for this whole time, has been looking through a window covered in kisses, so that she knows that even though she's alone there and you know, very isolated, she's loved. So there are lots of those examples. I think it was Mr. Rogers who said, you know, that in a crisis, always look for the helpers. So there are things that we can do. And again, that's the shift of focus. And that's kind of on us if we are in a place where we can do it. You can just look at all the scary and sad and terrible things that are happening. And you can also look for the things that are showing humanity and the ways that people are helping and the beauty in life. And even if it's just, you know, yesterday on the Facebook page, I just posted a picture of a flower and said, show me a flower from your garden. Now, nobody's going to snap out of a depression or have their anxiety. I'm not going to say that. But, you know, because of a picture of a flower, but it can shift your focus to something beautiful instead of something scary.
Terry, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. This discussion, all discussions, the more we talk about it, the safer it is for other people to talk about it. This is how we fight stigma.
Terry McGuire with Mental Health America of Wisconsin, and we have a link to her podcast at WPR.org/mornings. If you or a loved one is in need of help, 211 Wisconsin provides 24/7 referral help. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.